Okay, good afternoon, everyone. It's my pleasure to welcome you to today's Capital Link Forum. This is the last and hopefully not the least, like Nicholas was saying, and hopefully we're not trying to stop you from your lunch. So we'll try to make it accordingly and timely. So my name is Martin Chan, Business Development Director of DNB Maritime Area, Hong Kong and Taiwan. And I'm the fourth Martin in this event, and hopefully I'm not the lesser of the four. So before I continue, I want to introduce our panelists first. So first, Dr. Anil Sharma. He is the founder and CEO of Global Marketing System, GMS, the world's largest buyer of ships and offshore assets for recycling. Second, we have Mr. Gautam Chellaram. He is the chairman of KC Maritime, a family-owned business managing fleet of dry bulk carriers headquartered in Hong Kong. And then next, we have Charis Plakatonaki, Chief Strategy Officer. Hopefully, I didn't pronounce you incorrectly. She leads the company's strategy planning, ESG, human resources, information technology, public affairs, and corporate communications. And Star Bulk comprises of over 160 bulk vessels. Heng, welcome. Heng Chow is the chairman of Wakong Maritime Transport Holdings, chairman of China Subcommittee of Hong Kong Shipowners Association, chairman of the Port Welfare Committee. He's also the founder of and convener of the Greater Bay Maritime Forum and the leader of the Greater Bay Area Task Force under the Hong Kong Shipowners Association China Subcommittee. And Heng is also the founder and chairman of Hong Kong Chamber of Shipping. Last but not the least, Mr. Xu Mingyuan. He is the executive director and CEO of SITC, and he has been in this position since 2024, and he has been servicing them for the close to three decades. So it's again the pleasure to moderate this distinguished panel of experts who will share the insights of several critical topics shaping the future and a unique vantage point for ship owners. Through the lens of experts, hope we can see on the lens ahead and how they might integrate innovations into operations. So without further ado, Dr. Sharma, since you're closer to me, I'll ask you the first question. In the context of increasing environmental regulations and market pressures for green shipping, how do you extract value from vintage fleets, and how do you operate and upgrade these vessels?
Thank you, Martin. That's an interesting question. So my background, as Martin said, is ship recycling. I've been doing this for about 30 years. We have bought more than 5,000 ships in the last 30 years. So that gives us into a lot of old ships in all various sectors. And about 10 years ago, we also started a different division called Lila Global, which owns about 50 ships. In 2015, we built brand new vessels, Ultramaxes here in China. And then I realized that's not where I add value. I add value in the mid-age vintage sector. And so we decided to focus more in that space, A, because we understand old ships and also happen to like old ships. We can grow in various sectors. So we have everything from LNG to oil tankers to containers to dry bulk. So it gives us the flexibility to come in and out very fast at a relatively lower cost point. The advantage we have is we don't have to sell our company, because it's a privately owned company, to analysts or stockholders. So we make decisions very fast. I'm a U.S. American Indian citizen, so we pass KYC of owners. So that gives us an ability to move in all sectors where we see opportunities. So we bought containers before the containers became hot. We bought tankers when the tankers became hot. And now we're holding on to bulkers and some containers and heavy lifts and J19s and some LNGs. So I think the extraction of value to me is really coming from buying opportunities. Everybody says you want to buy low and sell high. It's easier said than done. Right now, it's so foggy, we don't know where the opportunities are. But when we come in, we move fast. So that's, I think, one way of we are extracting value. But you said green shipping. so for us, that's the other thing, because I see that normally people who buy old ships, either they are small owners with about 5 ships or less, or they're big owners. And for them, an old ship is a cash cow. They're not going to invest on it. What we do is we look at this as our investment. So our 10, 15-year-old vessel, we actually spend a lot of time and money on it, trying to see how we can upgrade it to make it more sustainable. So because our ships are chartered by the big charterers, the liner companies charter our ships. So they want to see a good, a well-maintained vessel. So I think that brings also an ability for us to look at, make it more sustainable.
Thank you, Anil. Since you're talking about investing into ships, so, Hing, we're talking about, circling back, investing into assets, even when the prices are high on the high side. So what are the main factors of an investment decision to upgrade a ship or to buy a new or younger ones?
If you want a one-word answer, that is flexibility. So whenever we buy ships today, I think we need to think about the future. We also need to think about now. Asset prices are very high, and it's not easy to break even on any assets, really, on current value. So the reality as a ship owner, you need to be responsible towards the market, you have to be responsible towards your holders, and you have to be responsible for the future. So when we buy ships, we tend to do a thorough technical assessment of what can be done 5 years down the road, but particularly comes dry dock 10 years down the road, because I think, you know, if you buy an asset that's traditional fuel, fine. If you have the best design, they're probably not 2030 proof, but you can probably operate it quite efficiently for the next few years. And if you go dual fuel, unless there's a very good regulation argument for it, either you are operating within the EU and within fuel EU, it allows for carbon emission calculation by fleet. So there's some sort of a pooling mechanism that will allow you to take a dive into dual fuel. That can be economical. Otherwise, as a ship owner, speculating on dual fuel, that is not really our business, because there's still a lot of uncertainty hanging around what will be the most readily available, be that LNG, be that methanol, be that ammonia, or other solutions. But at the same time, we see that some of the things that are not necessarily a mainstream argument, such as carbon capture, it could come into play. Regulations, particularly what IMO decides within the framework of the next 12 months, could have a major impact on the viability of the different fuel solutions. And as I said, as a ship owner, we are not in the business to speculate on fuel, but we have to be ready.
Thank you, Hing. You're talking about flexibility and future and carbon emissions. So, Sharis, let's take us to what you see, given the shipyard's capacity is coming up to be booked. What can be done to improve your fleet efficiencies with current fleet?
Thank you, Martin, and thank you for the specific question, because in our industry, we talk a lot about what will happen in the next 5, 10, 15 years, but we tend to forget about what needs to happen today. And there are tremendous opportunities today when it comes to energy efficiency. And here it's worth noting that energy efficiency solutions also make financial sense for ship owners, because they have a payback period, in the sense that we're able to reduce our bunker consumption by implementing such solutions. Now, we own and operate a fleet of dry bulk vessels, around 160 vessels. These vessels trade in every corner of the world. It's a diversified fleet ranging from Supras, Ultras, and up to Capes and Newcastlemax vessels. Any available solution that is out there in the market in terms of technical measures, we will implement, provided that it makes financial sense, that it is a proven solution in terms of efficiencies, whether these are ducts or boss cap fins, propeller replacement, shaft power limitation. These are technical measures, retrofits that we are implementing across our fleet. Of course, our number one priority is hull maintenance. We see significant improvements in bunker consumption and in greenhouse gas reduction when we implement proper hull maintenance. This practically means that we inspect the hull of our vessels frequently. We clean the hull of our vessels more frequently than we did in the past. Perhaps at times we bring dry docks earlier. We use advanced anti-fouling paints. And we also pilot remotely automated hull cleaning robots. We see a lot of potential in this specific technology because it enables us to continue to keep the hulls of our vessels clean. Now, at the same time, we leverage technology when it comes to operational measures. So we use advanced software that uses artificial intelligence in order to continuously monitor weather data, perform weather routing, optimize our speeds, but also optimize arrival in port based also on market conditions. And along with technical and operational measures, we place a lot of importance on vessel performance monitoring. During the past years, we have invested heavily in creating an in-house vessel performance management team, but also implementing telemetry and sensors on board our vessels. This way, we're continuously keeping track of vessel data, identifying overconsumption, and creating a culture in our company, whether this is in our technical or operational department or even commercial teams, that we need to take prompt action whenever we see overconsumption, whether this is related to technical or operational reasons. And last but not least, we work also with other partners. So we have recently established the Maritime Emission Reduction Center. This is an Athens-based global center with the support of the Lloyd's Register Foundation and four other Athens-based international shipping companies, where we will aim to develop, assess, and disseminate technologies that improve the energy efficiency of the existing fleet. Thank you.
Thank you, Charis. You're talking about efficiencies, global trading, and also a little bit into the hull and all these issues. So let's go to another ship owner, Xu Zong. So in sustainability is becoming increasingly important in the shipping industry. How do you balance the need for environmental responsibility with the operational demands of the container and the logistics sectors?
Today, maybe LITC is a container line carrier for intra-Asia. Today, maybe the only one container shipping company today. We operate about 110 vessels. LITC only vessel about 100. For our environmental practice, first, our practice is we renew our fleet. The past 3 years, we renew our fleet, but we built, delivered about 40 containers. It's more than 30% of our fleet. So I think because of the technology and the design of the fleet, the new vessel is for the fuel consumption, very broad. The same size vessel, compared with 10 years ago, now almost 20% of the fuel consumption save, much better. So our total fleet now average age is 7 years. So compared with 10 years ago, our vessel fuel consumption about 15% over save than before. This is my practice, I think. It's environmental demand and our, how to say, cost, very good balanced. Second is, I think we also, for our land logistic facilities, we also now renew. For example, we operate 2 million meters of, square meters of depot. We need so many rich sticker. Recent years, we all rich sticker, all purchase new purchase van, all is electronic van compared with the old van. I think even though the price a little high, but the total cost is 10 to 5 years. The cost is also cheap, also very good for the environment. For recently, this year we have invested about 30 million for a new smart depot at Qingdao. This smart depot is the first one in China, maybe in the world, the first one. It's in the home, all the depot in the home, and no any people, and all is fully automatic, and 100% is green energy is by no any oil operation. Thank you.
Thank you, Zhou. Thank you for your insights and your information. So let's move a little bit towards the future of the shipping industry. Gautam, how do you foresee the future of the shipping industry in terms of economic trends, technological advancements, and regulatory changes? And what strategies should ship owners and managers adopt to stay competitive and resilient?
Okay, so thank you, Martin. From our perspective, KCM looks at three initiatives. So first, we look at our new buildings. Second is our existing fleet. And third is looking at alternative fuels. So for our new buildings this year, they're compliant with EEXI, which requires minimal reduction in engine power without sacrificing maximum speed. For our existing fleet, we look at the low-hanging fruits, which are basically energy-saving devices, which we feel that we could get a fast payback on. So these are PBCF, rubber bulb, stator ducts, and of course, low-friction paints. The best part about these, they're relatively low in cost. So we look at payback within roughly 2 years, increase vessel ratings by about 2%, and they equate to roughly about 8% in fuel savings. The third is we look at, we are now evaluating biofuels. We believe that this actually will be another low-hanging fruit as how the industry will change instead of just supplying with low sulfur fuel. So I think this is just going to be a general trend in the industry, and I think this is something that's going to help in overall, in addition to the energy-saving devices.
Thank you, Gautam. You're talking about the biofuel or the green fuel. So, Sharis, go back to you again. As a ship owner, what do you see the most likely option for green fuel taking also into account of fuel availability, fuel pricing, port infrastructure, and bunkering issues around the world?
Thank you. Thank you, Martin. So I'm very happy that Gautam mentioned biofuels because we talk a lot about the hydrogen-derived fuels, fuels of the future, green fuels, net-zero fuels. But what are we going to do today as ship owners when as of January 1st, 2025, we have the fuel EU maritime regulation that Hink made reference to, and we need to reduce the carbon intensity of the fuel that we burn in our engine rooms. And the dry bulk and tanker fleets, contrary to container lines, which have a certain level of exposure to LNG, burn primarily HFO in combination with exhaust gas cleaning systems or VLSFO. So practically, the only way for us to comply with fuel EU maritime is to blend biofuels in the fuel that we burn. And this is our strategy at the moment. So as Gautam mentioned, we are looking into securing contracts with biofuel producers so that we make sure that we have the adequate quantity and the competitive price to burn biofuels as of 1st January 25. And now, Martin, you mentioned challenges. The question is, what will happen in 2027? Because we expect that next year the IMO will be deciding on a similar carbon standard, fuel standard at a global level, which means that, again, the dry bulk and tanker global fleets will need even more biofuel quantities come 2027. So will there be enough biomass, enough feedstock for the production of these biofuels? We expect also competition from other sectors. So availability is one concern, but also pricing is another concern. So here we would urge policymakers to support the industry, both in terms of ensuring availability, but also competitive pricing of biofuels to make sure that we do make progress when it comes to decarbonization versus just paying penalties and passing on the cost down the value chain and down to the end consumer. So this is today. Of course, it doesn't mean that we're not interested in what happens in the future. We stay abreast of developments and engage with the relevant stakeholders across a wide range of fuels, green ammonia, green methanol, even nuclear. Green methanol is what we see coming into the market sooner than green ammonia. I was in also with him. We're in Shenzhen last week participating in the clean fuel workshop, I was very interested to hear that it is expected that there will be abundance of biomass coming from Northeast China, from corn and wheat stray, in order to create biomass that will be used for the production of what is called hybrid methanol. So through gasification of biomass and in combination with e-hydrogen, it is expected that we should be seeing availability of this type of methanol in the coming years. Green ammonia has the challenges of safety, as you all know. So we think that it will take a few years before our industry feels safe about burning ammonia in the engine rooms of our vessels. And of course, nuclear is also a solution, but it will take many more years for this technology to develop and again to have certainty around security and safety. Hink mentioned carbon capture and storage. This is also a very promising technology on board our vessels. We are conducting a number of pilots. What we see as a challenge is not so much how to capture the carbon. We are able to do that. But what happens to the how do we store and dispose of this carbon? There isn't any regulatory framework yet around disposal of carbon captured from CCS on board. But a final note, given that a number of the fuels that we as an industry are assessing for the future are not 100% green, CCS can be, in combination with these alternative fuels, the solution for the future in order to get us to the net zero or around net zero target that we have agreed as an industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharers. Well, up to now, everybody is talking about how to use different type of fuels, different technology, carbon capture storage, and stuff like that. So let's go a little bit different to the digital tools. For Xue Zong, what's the rapid advancement in technology, and how is SITC leveraging digital tools in innovations to improve efficiencies and service quality in container shipping and logistics? Can you share some specific initiatives or technologies that have been particularly impactful?
Actually, for the digitalization, it's a very hot topic in container shipping service. Recent years, a big change for the, especially in customer service, for container service. Now, we almost all procedure we can implement mandated by online service. For example, for customer from booking, we can use you booking by online and the pickup container with the equipment management we name EDR. This also now use the online EDR. We can pick up the empty container and the customer also arrive, the cargo arrives destination. We have DO, also EDO, and customer. Anyway, all the supply chain can without paper can finish all the cargo delivery. I think this good. This is one. Another is the for some logistic devices. Like we recently replaced so many river containers to smart container. By the smart river container, customer can get their cargo information anytime for temperature, for cargo condition, and the container location, all can get. That's a big help for customer efficiency. Also go for safety for the transportation of the river. And also recent years, we also do some effort for the research for the blockchain. Now in China, some city like in Shanghai, we operate about 800,000 TU every year. But we buy information sharing blockchain system technology. We can provide to our customer every location of their container inland. Actually, we're not involved to their land transportation, most of the cargo. But we can provide that their every container land, when pick up container, when the cargo, the truck will move to their factory, and when the truck will return container. This actually not by the business, the job not by us, but we can get the information. I think in the future, we will also, especially for blockchain, I think in shipping, especially in container, service will be used more and more. Thank you.
Thank you, Xue Zong. So good to hear from all of these. But I would like to again shift to another different way of different individuals and companies, how their dedication would be like. So start with you, Anil. In your role as both of head of world largest shipping recycling company, GPS, and a green ship owner, Leader Global, how do you advocate and promote sustainable and responsible ship recycling and convince the ship owners to scrap ships? And how do you view the extensions of a ship's life to do today's changing shipping industry?
Thanks, Martin. I can't convince owner to sell ships for recycling. I mean, that's the market dictates that, and mainly the freight market. So I think on this panel there are about owners with about 500 ships. I can't convince any one of them to even sell one ship to me today. So I think that's not how it works. So the question is, when the owner decides to sell a ship for recycling, you know, what's the value? How do you make sure it's done sustainably? So the good thing is the Hong Kong Convention, incidentally, we are in Hong Kong, comes into force June 26 of next year, which means starting June 26 of next year, every ship that has to be recycled has to be recycled according to the guidelines of the Hong Kong Convention, which is sustainable, the solely IMO Convention. So all I can do is tell these owners to say, guys, if you want to do a Hong Kong Convention, here are the options, whether it's in India or in Bangladesh or in Turkey. We don't have yards. We are the people in the between. We are value providers. So that's what we do. So that's the sustainability part. We see a huge overhang of tonnage. I think according to BIMCO, there's about 15,000 ships that will be recycled in the next 8 years. So we expect it to be a very, very busy time in the ship recycling industry. There's so much liquidity in this market, so many people just hanging on to their old tonnage. And the technologies are coming, biofuels, I'm hearing all this. For a while, that was going to be methanol, ammonia, that debate. I even heard the term nuclear. Thank you, Charis. I think that's a great fuel to use, nuclear. But okay, all these things are way far down. So I think when the time comes, especially with the freight rate corrections, the charter rate, if you look at containers, the Red Sea issue helped the container industry. When it comes to tankers, the gray ships, the Black Sea, whatever, the sanctioned fleet, whatever you call it, that has helped the industry. When it comes to dry bulk, again, the trade patterns have emerged. So all this is brilliant. 2012, we scrapped 60 million deadweight tonnage. That was the biggest. Last year was the slowest in about 15 years. So I think I'm looking for a perfect storm coming up, whether we will cross the 60 million deadweight, whether it's in 2025, 2026, I don't know, but we'll be very, very busy. Now, the Leela Global part is just as I said earlier, it's a low-hanging fruit, as Gautam mentioned. For us, it's some ships we want to trade for 5 years, 10 years. Some ships we feel are just going to have, as Warren Buffett says, cigar butts. You know, we're going to take a few puffs of this cigar before we are done with it. So it's a whole range of vessels we do. The common thing is we want to make sure they're done well. I mean, they're operated sustainably, safely.
Right. Thanks. Thank you, Anil. So I was hearing about there's a GMF. So as a founder signatory of the GMF call to actions towards decarbonization and your company's commitment to meet and exceed the regulatory compliance, can you share some of the key initiatives or technologies that KC Maritime has implemented to enhance compliance with the latest maritime regulations and improve overall operational efficiencies? Gautam?
Okay. Well, focusing on the regulatory changes, there's a plethora of environmental regulations, either by IMO or by local legislation. And some of these local regulations are not fit for purpose, such as CII in its present form. In my opinion, that all of this, when it's not clearly laid out, only puts more stress on ship owners, and I'm sure all these panelists feel the same way. Regional regulations such as EU ETS and Fuel EU are positive, but they're highly administrative in nature and complex. And we should bring more standardization to the industry. What ship owners should adopt to stay more competitive? I see us in a twilight zone, which means we're at an intermediate undefined point whereby the industry doesn't have clear direction on fuel for tomorrow. And we are testing the waters on alternatives at a time when new building prices are at an all-time high. Therefore, from our view, we will continue to invest in R&D, recycle our existing tonnage to stay fuel efficient, but probably avoid new buildings. Thank you.
Thank you, Gautam. So talking about commitment, dedication, so Mr. Hing, he's chairman of Wakong Transport. He recently started the Shipping Chamber of Commerce. So as a chairman of the new established Hong Kong Chamber of Shipping, could you tell us what the vision is of the Hong Kong Chamber of Shipping, and how is this chamber will help to address the challenges facing ship owners in the transitions to decarbonization and digitalization, not aside from this Asian region, but also the global?
A lot of the topics being discussed in today's panel, digitalization, green fuels, decarbonization, these are topics that come up in every panel now. But it's very difficult. If we go back 5 years, certainly 10 years' time, in the past, back then people couldn't possibly have imagined the kind of topics that we have today. The rate of change is greater than ever, and it's not one thing. It's a perfect storm, really. We're looking at once-in-a-lifetime kind of paradigm shift. We have a world-leading economist here who will tell you that we are in the midst of one of the most significant economic paradigm shifts that humanity is facing. And therefore, what we need to do is actually take a few steps back, look at supply chain, look at how human society produce goods, transport goods, utilize goods, recycle goods. Everything needs to be re-examined. The way in which industry have structured ourselves, including how UN has structured itself, how we've been asking questions, which is dividing human societies into different production units, dividing the whole cycle of production and use into different silos of industrial sectors. Are they useful or are they harmful as we move along? And I would say probably they require re-examining. And one of the things that propelled me and our like-minded founding members to think about why now is timely to start the chamber is because we need partnership. When shipping tries to come up with the smarter solution to digitalize ourselves, maybe other people have been there, maybe Huawei or an Apple come up with more intelligent solution. If we try to electrify and therefore go to net zero tomorrow with our port operations and short sea transport, maybe the likes of CATL, maybe the likes of BYD, maybe the likes of Mitsubishi, they have already done the hard work. So why invent the wheel? What we need to do is actually reach out and talk to supply chain partners, open up the conversation, look at everything with fresh eyes, reconstitute ourselves as a value system with maritime transport remaining in the center, because 90% of human transportation is still by sea, so we remain important. But let us not think that we can find solution on our own. We need partners. And I think if we cast our eyes wider, we also see that we are part of a very complex, rapidly evolving political nexus, where today is one thing, tomorrow is another. How we define a lot of things are open to challenge, open to questioning. So I think at this moment in time, we need structures, also industry bodies, to start throwing up questions, and also through those structures to start new partnerships.
Thank you, Hing. So he basically almost summed up everything what I want to say. but actually, throughout these 2 days and throughout these few years, you probably can hear a lot of these decarb efficiencies and all these sustainability, ESG, and also. But I just learned another word from Hing, partnership, or in another way, partnering or pooling together. So in a way, before I ask these panelists to give a final summary of what they have heard today and what they have seen and what they want to express, I want to express a little bit on pooling. I think early in the panel discussions earlier, we can hear that a lot of these asking for the kind of unified or some kind of regulatory way of helping the industry moving forward in one direction instead of everybody investing into different directions. So I think pooling or partnering, like Hing was saying, I think will be the next common word in the maritime industry should use. Hopefully I'm correct. So Anil, can you share with us what kind of summary you can have for throughout this whole panel discussion and also our own panel discussions?
You know, I come from outside this industry. I'm an academic. 10 years in my previous life, I was a professor in U.S. So I have a very different way of looking at this industry. Hing said makes perfect sense. This industry is a very storied industry. It's a legacy industry. And people have been looking at the same things, just making incremental changes. This industry requires bolder vision to look at things from the ground up. And I remember I was at a conference somewhere and they said, we need Elon Musk to come into this industry. Then he will think changes will happen. We don't need Elon Musk. So I think there's enough talent in here. The question is, are we going to look at things from an end perspective? What's the outcome is? The good thing in the last 30 years, whatever I've did is I've never followed anyone. I've just tried to see where the value proposition is. And in my own little world, it has helped us. So I think I invite the owners to look at the same way. Just look at totally from the ground up and not just keep on doing the same thing, incremental changes. I remember Martin Stofford saying in a conference in Japan, saying, if you take a BMW that's 10 years old and a BMW that is today's BMW, it's totally different. I have been recycling ships. I've seen ships. I've recycled ships that are 5 years old. I've recycled ships that are 50 years old. Okay, there are changes, but these are all incremental changes. There is nothing unique. So I think it is coming time to look at industry from a very, very different perspective.
Thank you, Anil. So Gautam, since Anil was talking about legacy, you are part of a legacy and the shipping industry in Hong Kong as well. So your family started it. So can you share and summarize a little bit?
Sure. I mean, I think from our perspective, it's sort of slow and steady wins the race. Historically has been a very slow industry in terms of technology. Now it's moving at a much faster pace. But then, like the car industry, that was able to transform very quickly. I think shipping, just nature of distance and cargo carried, I don't think it'll move to, literally zero burning fuels. We'll always have that somewhere in the equation. But I do think that we're doing the right things by looking at all the alternative fuels. And over time, I think we'll get an answer as to what will be the fuel of tomorrow. So I think we should just continue investing in R&D, looking at biofuels, looking at ESDs, and seeing where things go for the better.
Thank you, Gautam. Another legacy. Let's ask Hing.
Well, I'm in the middle of trying to transform a legacy business into a startup. So I think probably this industry requires more imagination. I fully agree with Anil's comments. I think, we are used to doing things in a certain way for a very long time. And as I said in my previous statement, it's time to re-examine some of these premises. And I think if we have more like-minded ship owners doing this together, the better.
Thank you, Hing. Sharis, can you share a little bit?
Yes, thank you, Martin. So historically, looking at our industry, it is primarily the regulations that have been driving changes. And one needs to learn from mistakes of the past. We have seen many instances in the past where regulations were drafted in such a way that they did not address the reality of the industry, which led to a number of issues that the industry had to overcome and perhaps slower progress. So this is a call to action for policymakers, regulators, governments to stay in close touch with the industry, to engage industry players in their discussions, in drafting regulations, to make sure that regulators understand the intricacies of the shipping business, understand the reality, and also to ensure that this is happening at a global level, that regulations are well designed, but also that we avoid focusing only on penalties, because by focusing only on penalties moving forward, there is a high risk that ultimately we will pass on this cost to society without actually decarbonizing. So we need to make sure that as an industry we push for incentives to be given along with the penalties. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharis. Zhizhong, do you have anything a little bit to add on, or?
Okay.
Please.
I think anyway, today we study so much, and as shipping is a very cycle industry, so we must be dealing with the technology, dealing with the regulation, dealing with the customer demand. So anyway, we must keep in study. Thank you.
Thank you, Zhizhong. So I think, well, we control time quite well, so we're a little bit ahead of schedule. So I guess that's the end of this panel, and hopefully everybody benefited, and hopefully everybody is not too hungry from after at this event, but hungry for more technologies and more information from the industry. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, panelists.